The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. It is Monday the 30th of March, 4 minutes past nine. And we're really pleased that you've decided to join us. We've got lots coming up on the programme. We'll reflect on that great win for Donegal in Croke Park yesterday, and we'll keep you across all the very latest news as well. We invite you to get involved in the conversation. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. Give us a call either on 07491 25,000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. And just a final reflection on the weekend. It was a wonderful night on Saturday night, celebrating Paddy Keeney, the Donegal Person of the Year. I didn't retain the best dressed male, unfortunately. It went to two very worthy recipients. Congratulations to them. But it was a great night. And as I said to Lee just before the news there, we've got some video from that. And we'll put that together and put it out in the socials a little later on. Right, don't forget you can watch the programme today if you wish. We stream on YouTube every day, so that means you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland and give us a like and a subscribe. It's very useful just in terms of algorithms and what have you. We're also on Facebook, across all our Facebook channels, and on the X platform, I believe X. They change the APIs from time to time on X, and sometimes the stream's successful and others it isn't. But anyway, there's no excuse not to be involved. Right, let's look at some of the papers this morning. The Donegal News. Income limits locking families out of housing. A Donegal County Councillor will today call for urgent changes to social housing income thresholds in Donegal, warning they no longer reflect the cost of living. Councillor Jimmy Brogan is claiming that thresholds are no longer fit for purpose and fail to reflect the sharp rise in living costs, escalating rents and recent increases in the minimum wage. The Irish Daily Mail is in that space as well, because obviously we are seeing in other countries around the world restrictions on movement or work from home, and it's all to do with access to fuel. Some countries have great reserves and great supply lines, others not so. But the Irish Daily Mail is a bit of a doomsday view on all of this. There is growing concern the state may have to put COVID-style travel restrictions in place if the Gulf crisis continues for another month. A senior government source warned if there is a prolonged crisis, there'll be restrictions on travel. It's a case of brace yourselves for COVID too. The source added, no one dares say it, but the reality is the need for similar packages to coronavirus are being considered at the highest level. We could have similar restrictions on travel, or at a minimum, a strong campaign urging people to only travel by car if it's absolutely necessary. Working from home is suddenly in the eyes of the government, and employees are becoming it's becoming very popular again. They also did not rule out COVID-style economic supports. Let's go to page four. Noting this is also the reality that a lot of businesses are on the edge. Will they need to support to stay afloat? If they don't get it, we will face a proper summer of discontent. So hopefully that doesn't come to pass, but there seems to be something to it. On Friday, a huge crowd turned out in Derry. It was a vigil. And the message at the top of the paper here is, all we want is justice for Amy. Hundreds of people carrying flowers and candles braved the bitter cold to attend a vigil in Derry's Guildhall Square in memory of Amy Doherty, who was murdered in the city. Addressing those present, Amy's mother, Sharon, who was visibly emotional and comforted by her husband, Amy's father, Patrick, and Amy had been brutally taken. Let me just reread that. Addressing those present, Amy's mother, Sharon, who was visibly emotional and comforted by her husband, Patrick, said Amy had been brutally taken from them and her babies. I don't want Amy and the other 29 women's murderers to be in vain. Changes need to be made to a flawed system. And there was also hundreds that turned out in Carn Donagh as well. Donald Kavanagh from the newsroom attended that. And there is reporting on that on our website and on our socials as well. But a huge turnout in Derry and also in Carn. The Irish Sun: Mary Lou McDonald today reveals why Sinn Féin voted against the government's €250 million fuel package as she hits back at the Taoiseach's political stunt accusations. The US and Iran war in the Middle East has sent the cost of petrol, diesel and home heating oil soaring recently. And to help Irish households and businesses, the government announced new measures last week. They included cutting petrol taxes and levies by 17 cent per litre, diesel by 22 cent per litre, and extended the fuel allowance for another month. But Sinn Féin were the only political party to vote against the plan in the Dáil. In an opinion piece for the Irish Sun, Taoiseach Simon Harris accused Sinn Féin of pulling a performative political stunt, but the party leader issued or accused the government of abandoning the 750,000 households in Ireland that rely on home heating oil, many of those, of course, in this area. We don't really have the alternative there, do we? Back to the Middle East, and Israel police prevented the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem from marking Palm Sunday at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Beg your pardon, I'm not familiar with that word, I should be. For the first time in centuries, the Patriarch said, with police citing security concerns linked to the Iran war. The Cardinal and Friar Francesco Helps were stopped by police while walking to the church built on the site where Christians believe Jesus was crucified and rose from the dead. So there you are. A worrying development. And it's been covered in the news, but I thought I'd give it a mention too here. A quarter of children on CALMS list waiting over 9 months. A quarter of children on the waiting list for mental health services were waiting more than 1 month, 9 months, to be seen at the end of last year. The minister responsible for the area confirmed as she sought an urgent plan from the health services executive on how it would deal with the backlog. Mary Butler wrote to the HSE earlier this month calling for a detailed plan by the end of March to tackle child and adolescent mental health services waiting lists. So we'll see what they come up with there. And also, I wonder what you think about this. Opposition parties have slammed suggestions the government might allow residents to earn up to €14,000 tax-free by renting out newly built modular units on their property. And it's been called beds in sheds because, you know, I mean, but this isn't beds in sheds. These are, you know, these really quite modern modular homes that you can get now, relatively cheap. According to a report in the Sunday Independent, the government is considering introducing the policy to help alleviate housing pressure. The policy would allow homeowners to earn €14,000 tax-free by renting out newly built modular structures of up to 45 square metres in their back gardens. What do you think about that as a as an idea or as a potential solution to the problems we face? Right, now I'm joined on the programme by Raymond McDade, owner of McDade's Garage in St Johnstone. The last time we spoke to Raymond was it to the 24th of March, was it? I think it was earlier than that, no? Okay, about a month ago, right. We spoke to him about a month ago because two young men from Derry died and a third was seriously injured in a two-vehicle crash in St Johnstone. And we're back with Raymond again because, you know, at that time, Raymond, we were talking about the frequency, obviously the awful tragedy and loss of life, but we were talking too about the frequency of road traffic collisions in this area. You were calling down to them, I think you said, almost once a week, if not more. And unfortunately, more collisions continue to occur there before anything seems to be done to improve safety.
Yeah, that's correct, Greg, yeah. Nice speaking to you. On the 25th, that would have been on Wednesday past there, there were an accident about 5:30 in the evening. A young girl came around the corner, clipped the curb. The car went into a spin for about 30 metres, went over the ditch, and ended up in young Darren or Ronan Bevere's garden, in the middle of the garden. The car was probably destroyed, you know, but the girl wasn't seriously hurt, but she was very, very badly shook up, you know.
And of course,
we had to go up with the recovery truck then and move it out of the middle of the garden.
And of course, too, then the concern would have been if the car had come into contact with another vehicle whilst it was spinning out of control. That's the worry, isn't it?
That's the worry, Greg. That's what happened, the fatality accident. That's what happened to two young fellas, you know, come round, same, round the corner, clipped, and unfortunately they were very unlucky. A lorry was coming their way, you know, and if this girl had made a car or van or anything else, it would have been probably maybe another fatality, you know.
Mm. And whilst uninjured, thankfully for the most part uninjured, you know, that's a very... That would leave you very shocked, very nervous, very distressed. I mean, it is, and then the damage and loss of the vehicle. I mean, it is a real sickener for the girl.
It's a real sickener for the girl, but, you know, as I said there, you know, you're probably unlucky but lucky, you know, for just a few weeks back there, a couple of young fellas killed around this corner, you know.
Mm.
And Ronan Bevert has just moved into his house, Greg, just maybe 6 weeks ago, and he was the first on the scene of that fatality accident. And, you know, he's a young girl of 7 years of age, and I can't let her out of the house now since he's moved in, you know, because the wall and around the house is completely demolished with cars hitting it. And he's in a very rare scenario for he doesn't want to build a wall in case somebody gets seriously injured.
Mm.
And he doesn't feel safe without a wall, you know.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Yeah.
And he was on to the council maybe 3 years ago, but, you know, but maybe putting signage up and stuff like that, which the council did come out and put the signs up, you know, on both sides of the corner, but they didn't last 3 months. They're all knocked down with, you know, with accidents, Greg.
Mm. What do you think is the solution? Signage is fine, right? And I certainly don't want to attribute any blame in any of the recent collisions because we simply don't know. But I do know signs are there to try and reduce the speed of people who may not be familiar with the roads, but they're just signs, right? Is still the the best short-term solution some sort of rumble strips or whatever it might take to physically slow the cars and lorries and what have you down?
Well, I would say that the one that would slow them down, we would need probably four ramps in the village, you know. Mm. We need two on either side of the corner, you know. That's what really would slow them down.
Yeah.
This wee town takes a lot of traffic, Greg. You have people coming from Conway, you have people coming from Rafoe, you have people coming from Strabane, you have people coming from Lifford from 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning, and you have the same volume of traffic going the other way in the evening time.
Mm.
You know, and some people might not know this road, but there's a lot of people go through the town very, very hard, you know, which, you know, besides the corner and everything else, there's a lot of speeding going on.
Right, okay. And thankfully, in this instance, we aren't talking about serious physical injury or loss of life, but it is a further reminder that something has to be done because it feels to me, Raymond, and I don't want to be dramatic, it feels to me like it is only a matter of time.
Oh, that's definitely only a matter of time again, Greg. Now, you know, I was on to you, speaking to you, it's probably 3 or 4 weeks ago now, back on this, you know, 3 weeks since that. So, you know, it's a regular occurrence. You know, we'd be out there regular lifting vehicles. And as I said one time, we were up and before Roland moved into his house, he's a local fella here, we went up to collect a car with a recovery truck, and it was up against the gable of his house. You know, the impact was that bad, and the speed was involved was fairly high, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the council will need to be doing something. You know, they're spending a lot of foolish money other places. You know, all we want is 3 or 4 ramps, would probably maybe cost £5,000 to £10,000.
Yes,
would sort this out in the short term.
I'm not sure it is the money. I think it's probably has to have 6 months surveys done on it or something, Raymond. It's probably not money. It's probably more to do with how do you practically, you know, get them over the line.
Well, Greg, we were on to the council this last maybe 5 years about this, and there's still nothing done. We haven't seen anybody to approach any local people in the area at all about this. And, you know, lives are more important, you know, I would think. You know, a few ramps wouldn't put the light out on them, and it definitely would save lives.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll leave it there. Listen, thanks for that, and I hope we're not speaking again in the not-too-distant future on a more serious occurrence, because, my word, we're getting the warnings, like.
you're definitely getting the warnings, Rich. And thank you very much for taking the call.
No, thank you. That's what we're here for. That is more concerned there about the situation in St. Johnstone. There's a particular bad corner there. There seems to be a problem with cars clipping that corner and losing control of their vehicle. And there's two options, or there's probably more than two, but A, the car ends up on the far side of the road in a garden or something along those lines, or it meets an oncoming vehicle and there's a collision in that regard. So, another serious incident there in the last couple of days. If you've anything to say in relation to that, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or call us on 074 91 25000. Let's stay on the roads, and this is a slightly nicer story. Anne, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig.
And we're talking about kind people.
Pardon?
We're talking about kind people because you had an incident on the road recently. Tell
that
us what happened.
That is quite true. This day week, I was going to Letterkenny. I had a hospital appointment, but I was going an hour earlier, and I got a blowout near at Newton Cunningham. And I immediately got it. I phoned my son to come to collect me, so he would had all the arrangements made. But two very, very kind men from Clonmany, I would say construction workers, stopped to see if they could help. They wanted to change the wheel. And I said that my son was coming along. And then I said I had an appointment at the hospital, and they even wanted to take me to the hospital appointment.
Oh, wow.
It's just we hear about all the bad things, but we never hear about the good things and how good people are.
So the two lads, they offered to change the tyre for you, and then when you mentioned a hospital appointment, says, well, look, we can get you to the hospital appointment if you so wish.
That's quite true, yeah.
Isn't that
nice?
Right,
yeah.
Very good.
It was lovely. It was lovely. I was overwhelmed by the kindness of them. They were rushing to go to their work, but they took the time to stop to see if they could help.
Yeah, brilliant. That's nice. And obviously your son landed and got you back on the road in any case, but if you didn't have him to fall back on, these two strangers effectively would have got you back on the road.
They were there. That's quite true. Willing and able to help.
Okay. And was it one of those blowouts whereby, you know, you struggled to keep control of the car, Anne, or were you able to manoeuvre?
It was. It's just the car had a peculiar sound, and then all of a hop there was a blowout. But I was able, lucky enough, I was able to get into the side of the road.
Well done. Okay. Brilliant. All right. Well, listen, fair play to the two lads, whoever they are. Hopefully they're listening.
Yeah.
All right. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Anne. That is Anne there. Well done to the lads from Clonmany, if that was you. Fair play to you. Right. We were talking on Friday morning about a planning application that has been granted in Creasler. It's for the development of a service station, not on the site of the explosion, but close to it. And lots of you have been texting in, and there is mixed views in relation to it. It has to be said. I'm not sure if it's 50-50 or where it lands, but there's a lot of people in the area who believe it's the wrong place too soon. And there are others that say, look, you know, especially in this crisis that we are in, we need this type of facility in our area. It's very important to the town and village. And those views are out there. This caller says, every time I pass through Creasler, I say a silent prayer while passing the site, and I go into the chapel where there is a beautiful memorial to the 10 victims. I also pray for the train victims while passing the viaducts. I also pray for peace in the hearts and of the parents and families bereaved. We were also talking about further delays to the Children's Hospital. A caller says, the problem with the Children's Hospital is complete incompetence by government and Mr. Simon Harris. Look at any project they get involved in. Massive overruns, keep doing the same things and expecting different results. Or as I suspect, they don't really care. Trying to think of anything this current and last government have done well. And this is not confined to building projects. The incompetence is staggering, and yet we continue to vote them in. Right, okay. There's lots that... I suppose the thing about it is, and it's damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you are in government or if you are in power, you know, no one's praising you for anything or patting you on the back. And then when something goes wrong, you know, you've got an entire electorate plus every element of the media having a good close look at it. Parking costs. In the car park in Ballabuffet, there is no grace time when parking. I run into the bakery for bread, and I need to go there for special bread because of my diet. The bread is more expensive, and that's okay, I accept that. But I also have to always check if I've got change for a parking ticket, more money. Letterkenny parking has grace time of 15 to 20 minutes. Why doesn't Bally Buffet? Well, this comes up from time to time, and there's a few different hotspots around the county in terms of parking. I mean, there is a app that Donegal County Council have, and it's quite a usable app as well. I think it is usable. I haven't got a ticket whilst using it. And you can put a tenner onto it or what have you, and you can book your parking effectively before you even leave the house or step out of the car. So that is an option for you rather than going around and getting change. Greg, I have to have my back tooth out, but dental said I have to go on the HSC waiting list. There's an 18-month waiting list, and it's Galway or Dublin. Donegal is lost once again. Wow, okay. Why would it take so long to get a tooth out? Let us know if there's more details in relation to that, listener. Now, as you know, there are thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of thousands from Donegal, tens of thousands from around the country who live and work in Dubai. And it was quite interesting that in the wake of the United States and Israel launching their war with Iran, there was a lot of information flowing from the UAE, from Dubai, different places, you know, people that I would know or that would know I'm interested in the news and passing on videos or images or what have you. And then like that, it stopped. Because really they were being warned that to do so, they could face really quite harsh penalties. Radha Sterling is head of campaign group detained in Dubai. You wouldn't be surprised, Radha, and good morning to you, by this all of a sudden, the tap on information being turned off.
No, I mean, people are very fearful of these cybercrime laws. A lot of residents didn't even know that they existed to the extent that you could get charged for just sharing a photo or taking a photo and not even sharing it. So, I mean, the fact that this has just been a real focus for international media has meant that residents are just afraid. They're living in fear, and a lot of them have decided to go simply because it feels like an authoritarian regime, and there's missiles, and there's other issues as well. So it's just become a very unwelcoming environment.
And really, we don't have figures, do we? Because I do note that there were some releases on social media of people with black lines across their eyes. I didn't count them right, but it was a couple of dozen. But that we don't have an official figure of, you know, who it is, what their nationalities are, where they're from, what's happening to them in detention.
And I fear we'll never get those figures. It's not something that the UAE will want to tell us. They're not proud of it. I think initially perhaps they were, because they were seen maybe as security threats and it looked like they were doing a good job. But when you start arresting, you know, your average person on the street who's quite a patriot for the UAE and they're just sharing a picture with their mum or something, then suddenly it looks really draconian what they're doing. So they're not going to want to share those figures. And if they did, that, you know, we couldn't trust that they're accurate. So in Qatar, they've admitted to at least a couple of hundred arrests in the first few days of the conflict. But now we're weeks in, and the UAE has a stronger expat and tourist community there. So they're more likely, and with the, you know, very strong enforcement of these cyber crimes, they're more likely to have hundreds more than Qatar. But we'll never know the true figure, because what we're seeing is different nationalities. It's not just British, it's Europeans, Canadians. We're dealing with people from all over the globe, everywhere from Philippines to New Zealand. And people don't necessarily want to talk about it. A lot of their families want to keep it quiet. They don't know what's going to happen. In other cases in the past, they've been more outspoken to the media. But because of this overreaction and, you know, concerning behavior coming from authorities, it's not clear what they might do if people come and speak about what's happened to
them. But I think people that live and work there do accept that, and that is the price they're prepared to pay to have places that they can go and socialize, and for the lifestyle that the likes of Dubai offers to them. You know, I think people from here living over there are they're aware, and they sign up to it, and that's what they do. And if it means not posting stuff on social media to go about their business, well, so be it.
I think from my experience, I'd say that is an ideal sort of perspective. I don't think people do actually know what the UAE is really like. There has been a significant amount of money, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars actually spent by the UAE on marketing the city itself as a very safe place for foreign nationals. Not just safe, but also a modern place, a tolerant place, that even though they have these laws, they don't really enforce them. So, you know, they say, okay, you can't have sex outside of marriage. You can't, you know, commit all of these different crimes. You can't drink alcohol. You can't have drugs. And yet at the same time, it's one of the hubs, the central hubs for drug consumption. I mean, throughout the clubs, throughout the streets, drugs are prevalent. Prostitution's prevalent. Cybercrime violations are constant. They're a daily thing. I mean, you're not allowed to use a VPN in Dubai. You're not allowed to, you know, share a charity online in Dubai. I think most people see that, yes, there are laws on paper, but they don't believe they're enforced. And that is because of the UAE's marketing campaign. And I think that the UK government and other governments don't really warn citizens quite enough of the real dangers of being there. So there's a lot of people who are permanent residents there that had no idea. One of them was walking through the airport. He works for an airline and saw something to take a photo of, whether it was debris or an explosion, and shared a picture with his colleagues saying, are you sure it's safe to walk through the airport? Question mark. And, you know, you wouldn't expect that necessarily to be illegal, but he's currently locked up. So I don't think expats do know.
Yeah, and I think that they've been quite clever over there in that, you know, a lot of social media influencers base themselves in that part of the world. And in the initial days of the war, you know, they were using it for content, these missiles. Yeah, and then all of a sudden they happened to have a very courteous meeting with the police. And all of a sudden the videos were changed up to be effectively, you know, tourism marketing videos. So that is...
I mean, it's true. The influencers were brought down by authorities to the police station. And even though they had hundreds of thousands of views on their TikToks and their Instagrams, they were just told to delete those pictures, those videos. And they were released. They were never arrested. But other people who weren't influencers were arrested at the same time for exactly doing the same thing. And even now today, you can go online and you can see a number of prominent sort of influencers in the professional arena who attract a lot of investment into the country. They're still sharing and posting videos and photos of the UAE and what's happening with Iran at great risk, seemingly, but they are afforded that protection. And again, I think people are still confused. It's always been a conflict, I think, in you know, you do as we say, not as we do, or do as we do not. It's just so confusing. Most people didn't even know it was illegal to drink alcohol or have alcohol in your blood in the UAE because drinking is so commonplace.
So what is the function of your campaign group Detained in Dubai? Because obviously, you know, it wasn't formed in the last couple of weeks, in the last month. It's been around for quite some time now, but obviously a lot of what you would try and highlight is very relevant at the moment. So people are hearing more about Detained in Dubai. But why was it formed and what is its end game?
So we've been around for almost 20 years now, and it was formed after a colleague of mine from Endemol was detained in Dubai. And since then, we've helped about more than 25,000 people facing legal disputes, whether it's civil or criminal, or issues in the UAE and wider Gulf. So in these situations, we're providing real support on the ground to people facing charges. We've got lawyers working for us. They're checking on cases, seeing whether they're being escalated to national security issues. And we're liaising diplomatically with the UAE and also with our connections in the government. I would call us a crisis firm. So we respond to crises. Particularly in these circumstances. And I think you're right that this issue is being really highlighted now. But over the past, I think, 5-10 years, we've seen a lot of cases. We've seen, you know, the case of Lala Sharavesh. She was arrested over a Facebook post, another British national, Scott Richards, for sharing a charity online. So there have been consistent arrests of British citizens over these same cybercrime laws. But I think, you know, because then it's not every day in the media, it's not a constant influx like it is right now. I think people forget about these issues and maybe think it's safer than it really is. Now, we've also seen that people have been warned, that they've been reported to the UAE government for conduct for violating these cybercrime laws from their own country. So British citizens who are sharing content or in violation of the UAE cybercrime law, even though they're not there, could face arrest when they travel to Dubai. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be a serious issue and also a warning for people who are currently providing commentary on this war.
And just very finally, and thank you for so much of your time, what do you think this means now for the future image of Dubai and the wider area? It was always about safety, and maybe if it was authoritarian, you took that, right? Because it was safe and it was this and it was that and you didn't have to pay much tax and so on and so forth. But do you think this, do you think the area can, particularly Dubai potentially, do you think you can recover from this post-war? Because how vulnerable it is now, all these high-rise buildings and so on and so forth, right? It'd be very hard for the, it'll be very hard to make people feel very safe, I think.
I think so. And it's the uncertainty at the moment as well. We don't know how long this is going to go on. We don't know whether there's going to be a ground invasion. I mean, there's all sorts of chat about this. And this is on the ground for expats. They don't know whether the country that they can stay in good sense with their children, it's a risk. And when you have the authoritarian crackdown and the demonization of your own residents there and expats who have built a life, it's really, really worrying. So we have a lot of people looking towards other countries, maybe, you know, the type of people who are attracted to Dubai in the last crisis fled to places like Marbella and Miami and Bangkok and, you know, chose alternative sort of life in the sun locations to live in. So I think we're going to see more of that. Recovering the image, it's going to take some effort. It's going to take years. And the demographics are shifting in the UAE because of this. You've got a lot of wealthy people leaving the country and they're possibly not going to want to return for some time. But I think the UAE has, you know, offered some good incentives to people in the past, and they're just going to have to rethink, you know, what are our policies? Maybe some legal changes and maybe some stronger incentives, and they will long-term recover.
We shall see. Thank you so much for your time. That is Rad Sterling, head of Campaign Group, detained in, detained in Dubai. Now, let us get to some more mentions, some more of your comments. I've been told, by the way, to try and highlight this from the HSE, there's been an increase in reported scam texts relating to HSE services, specifically texts seeking payment for medical cards renewal. The HSE services do not ask for payments by SMS. So the HSE says it takes these scams seriously and monitor the web for instances of scam websites purporting to offer HSE-related services. If they find a scam website or are notified of a scam from the public, they take action to try and get that site taken down. So here are some of those simple things to keep in mind. Never give your bank details or PIN to someone over the phone or online. Ring the HSE Live number 1-800-700-700. If you've any concerns or suspicions, you should also contact your local Garda if you suspect fraud. Screenshot the email, text message and other communications for Gardaí. And the HSE would ask that members of the public make contact with any vulnerable friends or families to make them aware of these calls and text messages. And it doesn't even have to be, you can just be on your own maybe and not really fully aware that it is a scam and pass on your details and end up, you know, very much out of pocket. Now we are joined by Katrina Gunn, Assistant Garda Commissioner. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, we're talking about COCO's law and its launch, really. Tell us about COCO's law and its background.
Yeah, so COCO's law, it refers to the enactment of the Harassment, Harmful Communications and Related Offences Act 2020. And Greg, what that really means is COCO's law criminalises online bullying and harassment and makes it illegal to share or threaten to share intimate images without consent. So COCO's law came about after it was campaigned by mother of Nicole Fox, fondly remembered as Coco. So Jackie Fox lobbied and appealed for after the tragic death of her daughter took her own life as a result of bullying.
Now, the law is in place. It is being used, and this really now is about making sure that sort of ignorance of it isn't an excuse. Really, you could say, and getting to as many people as possible the message that these are serious crimes with serious consequences.
Yes. So, what An Garda Síochána Síochána did on Friday was, in collaboration with the Department of Education and our education partners, Webwise. We launched the first module of Coco's Law as part of the school's programme. So since 1991, An Garda Síochána has been involved in a school's programme where nationwide community Gardaí come into the schools and they do various modules. But on Friday was the launch of the first module on Coco's Law. And what we're really doing is getting the message across how Coco's Law is vital protection for young people growing up in a digital world. And the module will help students understand online safety. But we're reinforcing the message, Greg, of respect and consent. And also what we're highlighting for that there are consequences, but to keep on the right side of the law, it's important to build trust and that every action online has an impact. In particular, a message sent in anger, an image shared without thinking, or a joke that goes too far. Mm. And what we're really getting across, Greg, is that lasting consequence that has on the person that it's about or receives it. And we want students to pause, reflect, and consider how their actions, how their choices might affect someone else.
If we are in a different age now. Even, you know, we were talking about, I have figures in front of me about harmful communications in 2023, and it feels like we're almost in a completely different world now because we have the ability to generate images that are indistinguishable from what's fake and what's real. So if someone is generating images of someone or threatening to do that, would they also potentially fall foul of Coco's Law?
Yes. So it applies to, Coco's Law applies to both, although this is a school's programme and it will apply to children from the age of 12 up, it also applies to adults. So there's consequences. There's imprisonment up to 7 years, and there's also fines, and for intimate image abuse it's up to 7 years, and for recording sharing without consent is 5,000 euro fines, or up to 12 months. But what Coco's Law then developed, what it actually addressed, Greg, was that if you previously gave consent for the image, for the picture to be taken, well, then that does not mean that you cannot be prosecuted. You didn't give consent for it to be distributed or shared or used in that manner, which is very important.
And I think in terms of the conversation we're having now and the work that's going on in schools, I think it's really worthwhile maybe for us as those of us who are parents to sort of maybe sit down with the boys and girls and just sort of reinforce this message to them, because it's very important they realise the serious consequences.
And that's correct. And that will be part of the school's programme, getting that. You also see a lot of school boards now coming, seeking assistance, and also what happens outside the school. You'll have things that we see a lot of, Greg, that phones are confiscated during school hours. And then after school hours, these then phones may be used. So parents play a pivotal role in relation to it. And at the end of the day, we want to protect children and young people from being exploited or harmed, and getting that message across. Like, for example, when we have children in junior and senior infants, we're saying kind words, kind hands. Now it's reaffirming that message as first. So I didn't clarify that this is aimed at, the school's programme is aimed at first and second year students. So again, it's that piece around personal boundaries, respect, and consent, and knowing that parents will play a huge role, teachers will play a huge role in relation to that. And it's really, really important. And what is great, and it's an honour to have Jackie Fox was at the launch last Friday. And what that reaffirms, it's so impactful.
Yeah.
To hear Jackie's story, what the family went through, it's so impactful. And what we are doing is that this programme honours Coco's legacy by empowering young people to stay safe and confident online. And together we can build more respectful digital communities. And just one of our things that An Garda Síochána has done is that we have, through hotline.ie, if it's reported, that at the same time, simultaneously, you're looking for that image to be taken down from by the service provider. So that that's important as well, that if an intimate image has been shared without consent.
Okay. Listen, thank you so much for explaining it so well to us. That is Assistant Garda Commissioner Catriona Gunn speaking there. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you've anything to say there. Just a note, there is a big horse with a blue cover running around Glenwood Park area of Letterkenny. It escaped from a field, if anyone knows the owner. So it's a horse with a big blue cover running around the Glenwood Park area of Letterkenny. The man, the legend, Brendan Devaney, presenter of Highland Radio's DL Debate, is with me now. Good morning, Brendan.
Yes, what's a crack, Craig, man?
I'm doing good. Hey, what about yesterday?
Brilliant.
A good win.
I'm still up here. I'm in the lovely settings of the Grand Canal Hotel here in Dublin. Sponsors of our hurling. I have to give them a shout out. Yeah, so I stayed up. And phenomenal. Phenomenal match, Greg. What a day. You know, great intro day. Of course, Cork and Meath. Great excitement with Meath coming up and winning the division. And then our much talked about rematch, the big rematch in Croke Park with Kerry. I'm finding it hard to digest how much we destroyed them on the day.
What was the difference there? Because we were 21 points up at one point. Was it the fact that really the launch pad into the championship was how yesterday went? That's how it feels to me, that there, you know, the ghosts of the All-Ireland final, you know, had to be buried. But maybe that's not how Jim saw it, but it felt like that's what needed doing.
Yeah, definitely. There was a huge, I suppose, psychological situation for Donegal going into this game, because if you were to lose a Kerry game and maybe they outplay you, you know, you're going in with it's a tough mindset to follow it up, to think that you can't beat them. So it was very important that Donegal matched up to Kerry and showed that they could stop their attacks and we could compete in midfield, had two-pointers, you know, and really do a lot of things that we didn't do in the All-Ireland final. We did all them and more. It's hard to listen. It's if Donegal came, Greg, and properly wanted to win the match and went about it in the fashion that they do, and Kerry didn't. No, I don't want to take anything away from Donegal in the match. We did what we needed to do. We were brilliant on the day. Some phenomenal performances right across the board. But, I mean, I was looking at some of the coming Kerry players saying, is this the same guy that's in this jersey? You know, I couldn't figure out what they were. And there's so much talk about Jack O'Connor and, you know, winning the league before the championship and Kerry, and they wanted this big game. I mean, Kerry only have Clarity playing amongst their semi-final in a few weeks' time before they've won game against Cork. You know, so different from Ulster. So everybody talks about Kerry needing these big games and needing to, you know, be in the best team in Croke Park. But, I mean, talk about being second best, Greg. If you had told me Donegal were going to be, as you said, 20-odd points up at a stage, I would have said, listen, you need your head examined. But, you know, they were full value for it. They completely ripped Kerry apart. And say, all the ghosts that were hanging over us from that All-Ireland final were completely destroyed. So, listen, it gives us a great mindset. Now, of course, Kerry will look at that and think, right, we didn't turn up, we didn't play, the championship game would be different. But at least we know when we go about them that we certainly weren't as bad as the performance we were in the All-Ireland final.
Yeah, I think if Donegal had lost yesterday, it would have been the worst thing ever happened and we were banjaxed. But if Kerry win, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, it was a bad week, preparation, sure, it's only the league. But it's not only the league anymore. I think this is really, it's a big competition, you know, and to collect the title only for the second time, you only have to look at attendances throughout the course of the competition and viewing figures. I mean, it's really significant to win the league.
And Greg, it's significant. There was so much up and down in the league. If you look at some of the play Donegal brought to the league, they were the best team in it. They were playing the best football. And then against Roscommon, you know, particularly defensively, and Monaghan cut open a couple of times. So some people were worried. Kerry had destroyed Mayo, and they had taken Armagh apart, particularly in the first 23 minutes up in the Athletic Grounds last week, didn't allow them to score at all. So people were saying, are Kerry now coming with something strong? So going into the game, there was a few question marks over some of the performances of Donegal and Kerry at times, particularly in the last few games, good and bad. But we seen Donegal just completely do a man switch on, and it looked like Jim was saying, like a lot of people were saying, would he hold back? Would he empty the bench? Donegal went for this game, and when they did, the ferocity about the game at Kerry couldn't match it. Now, of course, it'll be very different come Championship down the line, but it was still a massive pointer in the season for Donegal because, you know, won McKenna Cup now, we've won the Division 1. So we're going into the Ulster Championship as favourites and looking for a brilliant summer ahead.
Yeah, you have a great panel, as always, on this evening. You're going to be discussing hurling as well, of course, a big game for the hurlers. And you also have James Daly on the show as well, reflecting on the latest game.
Both teams promoted as well. Listen, fantastic. Both teams, you know, hurlers back in the Division 2, unfortunately losing that final. A couple of their goals at the game won, and of course the ladies beating Wexford. They're playing Cavan in a couple of weeks' time, but they're also promoted. So everything's great in the world of Donegal GAA at the minute, Greg.
Yeah, and of course, you'll have to talk about Philadelphia as well. It's been a busy couple of weeks when you think about it, isn't it? From Philly to Croke Park and on, it's all good, all positive.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank God I didn't fly through the night in a very uncomfortable jet with maybe a wee bit of a sore head. So I'm in a lot better shape this week, Greg, let me tell you. But yeah, Philadelphia was brilliant. Conor Gibbons coming on there just to recap the weekend and the week that it was, and look forward to the future of this Donegal Diaspora event.
Yeah, indeed. Well done. Thanks so much, Brendan. Look forward to that. That is Brendan Devaney. The DL debate, it is on tonight, of course, just after 7 o'clock. You can listen to it and watch the show as well. And also listen to it as you wish or when you wish as a podcast. So thanks to Brendan. And a lot of positivity to reflect on. Men, the league champions, and promotion for the women and the hurlers as well. Some of your comments in relation to that. Really disappointed in Jim McGuinness pulling the old Arsene Wenger routine yesterday in relation to not seeing Michael Murphy's punch on the young Kerry lad. Everyone on the sideline saw it and the behaviour should be called out. That's from Noel. But Noel, if you didn't see it, you didn't see it. Excuse me. And I was listening to a couple of pundits debating it last evening or this morning, and one of them saw it and one of them didn't see it. But there you go. Now, also on that issue, first of all, I'd like to congratulate the Donegal team on their win yesterday, but I was very disappointed with the dirt that crept into the game. They represent the county, and it's very hard to see this in our game. You don't like to see players being sent off, but one should have, they say. Right, and I think we all know what they're referencing. But look, it's in the heat of a big game. You don't know really what's going on in the lead-up to these situations either, but you guys have your opinions, and we're more than happy to platform them here. We've got just four days to go. The 10K home makeover draw with Foy's is really closed, is nearly closed, but there's still time to grab your ticket with €10,000 for your dream home makeover plus €10,000 in cash. It's too good to miss. So to be in with a chance of winning the fantastic prize, simply buy your ticket online at highlandradio.com. It's really easy, safe and secure. Click on Win a Home Makeover, answer a simple question and choose your entry. So you can get one ticket for €15, you can get five tickets for 50, so a tenner each effectively if you bulk buy or group in with someone else and buy them. And the draw will take place on Thursday, the 2nd of April, and will be broadcast live on John Breslin's Around the Northwest show. So there's already been five lucky winners of a grand, but the big one is still there to be taken. And we don't know if it's a ticket that's been bought or a ticket that is yet to be bought. That's the whole joy of a draw. You just simply do not know. So it's not too late. Your ticket could be the winning ticket, and it could go into that draw drum just as soon as you click Win a Home Makeover on the HighlandRadio.com website, answer your question, choose an entry. Now, if you prefer, you can give us a call here at the radio station, 074 91 25000, and we will help you out in that regard. Or indeed, if you prefer, you can call up to us here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. It's a fantastic prize. It's €10,000 in cash, plus €10,000 from to spend in Foy's on a makeover of your home. Nice. 20 grand in total, that is worth. And as I say, you've just got till Thursday. John Breslin making the draw on his show on Thursday. Right, now, hi, Greg. How many more lives will it take to be lost on that corner in St Johnston before any action is taken? Why has no one from the council commented? The road's a disaster, cars are speeding, the traffic will not slow down by itself. The concerns and warnings of the people are being ignored again when there are constant crashes and the council has been flagged. They have to do something. Now, the councillors have raised the issue at the recent council meeting. I know that for a fact. And they've put pressure on the council to try and do something in relation to this. We've also contacted the council for comment as well. So, on GEA, I did see the Michael Murphy incident yesterday. Does Brendan think it was a red card? Well done, Jim and the boys. Enjoy your break. I just didn't get around to asking Brendan that. It was just because of time. On the issue of Coco's Law, what can happen if images sent between consenting adults, then if one of the adults shares the image, can they be charged under the law? Yes, you see, that is one of the interesting elements of this law. So if you choose to, whether you want to, you know, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. It's not. I wouldn't judge anyone. But if you shared an image of you with someone, you've shared that image with them. They do not then have the right to either A, threaten to share it with other people, or B, actually share it with other people. You never gave that permission. So it would be a crime, and it would be a crime under that law as well. So it is far-reaching. It is far-reaching, no doubt. Letterkenny Memories is taking place in the Station House tonight at 8 p.m. It's a free night of music and crack. Everybody's welcome. Light refreshments are being served. Resources, on the issue of resources, we talk in Donegal about the constant lack of resources and the huge waiting times for ambulances. Yesterday I passed a collision and there were what appeared to be huge resources present for what appeared to be a minor accident. Two ambulances and a fire brigade. No wonder you can't get an ambulance when you need one. Well, God forbid you were ever in that situation where you do need one. In advance, when a call is made, there are set resources that are sent out to whatever incident, and that's part of the emergency services. Often it is as bad as they've prepared for. Sometimes when they get there, it's not quite as bad as might have first appeared, but you have to send all the resources as is set out by your guidelines, because you'd be really glad to see them coming if you needed them as badly as they do. And I don't think there's an overreaction to road traffic collisions causing issues elsewhere in the health service, if you understand where I'm coming from. Hi, Greg. Very significant what the banks, insurance companies, etc. are saying about IS465. This is the updated, soon-to-be updated guidance. And it's in relation to what's needed to be restored to meet mortgageable conditions and confidence in the market. Can you show raise this with the BPFI, the Department of Housing, local auctioneers, etc.? It's something affects everybody trying to sell a house in Donegal, quite true. We have done deep dives into that in the past, and of course we will again into the future. Now, on the issue of elderly care, someone contacted us with the following message. I'm reaching out because I have a friend who is in her 90s and who is living alone. She doesn't want to cause a fuss, and that's why I decided to advocate for her. The home help situation is appalling, and she's saving the government a fortune by not being in a care home and still being able to be at home. I've stayed with her and witnessed it myself and cannot in good conscience stay quiet. It's an underfunded and staffing issue. These people who are coming in are doing their best with the time that they have. She has diabetes and needs someone to be there in the morning to get her up. Sometimes they don't get to her until lunchtime. How is this acceptable in this day and age for an older disabled person to have to be faced with this? How can our country, that prides itself on community and good nature, leave these people to rot? If I stay over with her and they know I'm staying, they don't turn up at all because she isn't prioritised, as they know she is not on her own that day. I'm a friend, not a family member. Can you imagine how demoralising and dehumanising that it is for her having to ask for help when she's entitled to that support? They tell her she is lucky she gets anything. It's absolutely ridiculous. We can do better than this and it needs to change. And that is a story that does come up quite often in relation to home help and home help care. But anyway, if you want to comment on a similar situation or you have any insight into that, please do let us know. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. On the fuel reduction, a caller says the government reduced diesel by 22 cent a litre before the war broke out and they're off three. I actually read this one. I read that one on Friday. Let me see. Fuel prices in our area went up 20 cent a litre. Looks like they're counteracting the government reduction. A lot of people saying that, as it turns out, it appears that, you know, the cost of oil, petrol, diesel is going up. And it just so happens it did so at the time where the government introduced a reduction. When the war started, petrol pumps put their prices up. Why can't they bring all the prices down now with the government's help? The petrol and diesel are were already in the pumps, so they shouldn't be allowed to profit off it. As I say, it's based on what's taken off the cost of the diesel and the petrol and when it's bought and what tax they get a break on, etc. So it is more complicated. But I feel every time I sort of reiterate that, it sounds like I'm trying to be a spokesperson for the industry when, of course, I'm not. Hi, Greg. It's an absolute joke for us to still be paying this carbon tax for a few cows when you see what they're doing in these war zones, blowing the ozone layers apart. What difference are we going to make? On the issue of farming, the businesses will pass on the costs of fuel to their customers. Who will the farmers pass the cost on to when they get to market? They have no choice in what they get. This is simply robbery of the people. Do you want to double check that number, Caroline? Because it doesn't feel right, but we shall see. I pulled in for diesel at a petrol station and the price board wasn't lit up at the pump. It was showing up at 304. I just left and didn't fill up. A lot of places aren't displaying their prices on the big board, but the prices are at the actual pumps. This is adding on more price instead of taking it off. It must have been 204. It's not 304. That surely must be a typo, is it? On the issue of the football, come off it, Greg. The Michael Murphy punch happened near the sideline. Jim couldn't not have seen it. And if by some miracle he didn't, well, he asked about it afterwards or after reviewing the footage. If a Kerry player had done it, we would be up in arms about it. Again, I'm not defending the situation, by the way, just to be clear. Another, what is the GEA becoming? President Jarlath Burns thanking the controversial IMO league sponsor and removing flags from GEA supporters. Yeah, not ideal. Right, now let's go to Angela Ward, owner of, what is the name of the School of Motoring, Angela, sorry?
Awesome, AWSOM.
Awesome, that is awesome. Angela, and you have with you Rita Meehan, do you?
I have Rita Meehan sitting here beside me.
I'm right here, sir.
How are you, Rita? It's Greg here on Highland Radio. Congratulations on passing your driving test.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, you've passed your test on the first attempt on Thursday, and if you don't mind me mentioning your age?
I didn't think it was such a big deal because I went with Angela, I took 6 lessons. You know, she could have taught me years ago because when Corona was out, she volunteered Meals on Wheels. And I teased her then and I go, Angela, could I have some driving lessons without my perm? And she said, indeed not. So
he wants to mention your age. Is it okay?
Oh, I'm 90 years old. I was born in 1936.
And Rita, judging by your accent, any of maybe your former driving experience?
I'm a Yank, but yeah. I moved here in 2019.
Yeah, but I'm thinking some of your previous driving trips. Yeah, some of your previous driving experience would have been in on the left or on the right, presumably, under American driving.
You know what? I have come across the ocean 57 times, and if I ever go back to America, I'll have crossed it 114 times.
Amazing.
I've made 57 trips to Dublin and Shannon airports, and it's always been Donegal, Galway, and Mayo.
Lovely. And why did you decide now was the time to sit your test over here, Rita?
Well, I'm in Ireland now, and my American license, you know, was only good for a year. So I couldn't drive until I had a license. And my husband now, he's a little bit sick, and I don't want to be bothering people. So I said, I'll just take my lessons. Went to Angela. She took a chance on me.
A good chance.
Oh, we had loads of fun. After we parked the car, we would sit there and laugh and laugh. But she was so calm. And it was just a wonderful experience. And I kind of knew the roads, but, you know, the roundabouts, sometimes you have to go around them two or three times to get off at the right exit. And it was just something I wanted to do. I'm fit as the fiddle. I think I have a good health report. And I cook, I clean, I don't do laundry. I mean, iron. I do not iron. When I left the house I was in, I left to my ironing board. And my iron.
Well done. Angela, what was Rita like as a student, Angela?
She was absolutely amazing. She was just like a breath of fresh air. She lives just up the road from my mum, so I used to take her for an afternoon appointment. After I had my lunch, I would drive up to her, and she'd always be sitting in the car waiting for me. She'd have the car sitting ready for takeoff, and she was just an absolute joy to teach.
And what particularly about her driving style it means you weren't surprised that she passed? Is it she's very calm, she's very considered, or what makes her such a good driver?
Her sense of humor. I remember when we were doing the reverse, if she was a little bit wide, sometimes she might have been a little bit wide from the curb, and I would open the door and she would just burst out laughing. That lovely laugh she had.
I wasn't 12 inches from the curb.
She never let anything get to her. She had a positive. The glass was always half full with Rita. And she'd say, okay, Angela, I'll just do it again. And her mindset, like, she really wanted that pink license. And that was what got it. That's what got it. Her mindset and her sense of humour and her determination.
Rita, those that sort of conduct the test don't often speak too much, really, do they? But were they? Did you get
the
any sense?
Testing.
Yeah, the driving test. Did you get any sense that they were surprised?
Was your driver tester surprised?
I think he was more scared than surprised. A 90-year-old Yank driving. And he didn't have any control, so I had all the control.
Yeah, you didn't hear
it. He was a lovely, lovely man. His first name was John.
John.
His first name is John. A lovely, lovely man. And I think I have to have any. In 2 years, do I have to have another test?
No.
I might have to have another physical in two or three
years.
Yeah,
just medical.
But I intend on having a good 100th birthday bash.
Good.
Brilliant. Rita, is there the lesson? You've taken this in your stride. It's just another day at the office for you. But, you know, is there a lesson there for the rest of us that if you want to do something, you just have to go ahead and do it? There's no point thinking about it. Just do it.
A lesson. He wants to know kind of a lesson. The line here is a little bit low.
I understand.
So I'll just reiterate. So Greg wants to know, can you give the listeners a lesson? Like, what would you take out of this whole experience?
Well, the first thing is never give up. Too many people tell me when I said I'm taking my driving lessons, they said, oh, for God's sake, at 90 years old, people are turning their license in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Don't give up. And if you are determined, if you need it, see, I really needed to drive. I have to go for my husband's medicines and his appointments. And I didn't want to keep bothering my two sons. I have one living not far from me. He married a lovely, lovely Irish girl. And anyone in Donegal town knows her, Pat Ward. And I have another son that came over here to stay with me because he knows him and his dad. Me and his father are getting old. So he's working now from home. He has his own apartment upstairs of a 10-room house. So he's a blessing now to me. He was the one that I couldn't drive. Every day he had to take me to the store, take me to the dry cleaners. So now I can do it myself.
You're an independent lady. She's an independent lady.
We'll just get you a washing machine now, Rita, and then that'll you be sorted then. You can learn how to...
washing machine.
I don't mind the washing machine at all, or the dryer and the floor. That's the irony.
We'll get
it
you.
Doesn't say 100%.
And Angela, what a wonderful experience for you. I mean, it's obvious listening to Rita that she's a lovely woman, right? That's clear. And I would
say a nice
person to be in the company of as well. So I would say it's been a lovely experience for you.
It was a fantastic experience, the whole thing from start to finish. She always kept in touch with me when she approached me initially saying she wanted to start. Obviously, there's a lot of paperwork involved. Rita was on the reduced EDT. She just had to do the 6 lessons. But there's a lot of paperwork involved to get over the line with that. So we did our 6 lessons before Christmas. And then obviously there's a waiting time. She had to wait 4 months. She completed the reduced EDT in November. And she didn't get called for her test until March. But fair play to her, she kept in touch. We did a couple of lessons just to keep her up to speed. And she was just amazing. As I say, a breath of fresh air. An hour wasn't long enough.
I called Angela. I go, Angela, can you help me? I need a pro. I haven't driven in 4 months.
So, she was just a pleasure to teach. She was like a breath of fresh air. And it just goes to show anybody between the age of 19 and 90 can learn to drive and pass the test if they have the right mindset.
Yep, and the right teacher. Fair play to you, Angela. Rita, thank you so much for chatting to us. It's a lovely story. And I know for you it's just another day, but it's inspiring, actually. Yeah. We put barriers in our way all the time, you know.
Yeah, I'm 22 years in business. I set up the business in Letterkenny. I used to live just actually a stone's throw from Highland Radio. I used to live up Mountain Top.
Right.
And then after COVID, I moved back to Donegal Town. And I love my job. Every day you have a different student. I teach doctors, dentists. You know, everybody needs to learn to drive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a rite of passage. It's a life skill. And I really enjoy my job. I'm calm and patient. I love listening.
Oh, you are so calm and so patient.
Every student's different.
And so professional. She wouldn't say anything to me if I'd ask her, can I do this? Okay. I have to do it. And she'd say, one.
Yeah.
I used to say, you get 8 tries, everything I do. And she goes, 3.
Yeah.
4.
Yeah. So, okay. No, I do love my job. Thank God. I'm blessed to be working, you know, in my hometown and in my, you know, my village. And it's just lovely. Every day is different. Every student's different.
Well done.
And
well, congratulations, Rita. And best wishes to the husband and the boys. And Angela, continued success with your business. Both of you, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to check me out, then my new website's awesome.ie, Angela Ward School of Motoring.
Well done, Angela Ward. Okay.
Angela Ward School of Motoring, awesome.ie.
Perfect stuff. The plug is out. All right, thank you very much indeed. Two lovely ladies there. Now, my next guest is John Paul Davidson, who's the co-writer and co-director of The Three Urns, working with Stephen Warbeck on this project. He's with us now. Good morning to you, John Paul.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good and wonderful to have you on the programme. Right, so The Three Urns is a road trip movie. Tell us more.
Well, it's a road trip which sort of doesn't go very fast or very far. And it's basically Kieran, who we worked with on a previous film, and we wanted to do another film with him because we so enjoyed working with him. And Kieran Hines is like one of the greatest Irish actors. So it's a delight to be with him. So we thought, well, let's do something which is different. He's got a name, he's got dialogue, and he's got a purpose, and it's to scatter his wife's ashes. He's been away from Ireland for 40 years. And so it's a sort of coming home, reconnecting with family and visiting the places that meant a lot to them when they were young. But things go wrong, as they should in a road movie.
And the locations manager had his work cut out, didn't he? Because there's a wealth of places to choose, but you have to narrow it down too.
Well, we have to narrow it down to 25 miles from your base, because that's the sort of financial requirement. So it was quite a job to do that. And we did a recce from basically Connemara all the way through to Donegal and settled on basically Rathmelton as our base, because within that area, there's so many fantastic locations. So we went to Dunfanaghy for beaches, Doe Castle for a kind of strange meeting with two priests. And then we had, Glenveagh, which is absolutely stunning, and obviously places around Letterkenny and Buncrannon and that. So it was very much that neck of the woods. And the only place a little bit further out was the Beltonee Stones near Rafoe, which I found on my first recce there, just sort of travelling through into Antrim, and was blown away by the location. It's probably not that well known. I don't know, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's just, you come across it in the middle of a field, and a really perfect stone circle. Very sort of magical spot.
And whilst the film is shot in Donegal, is it based in Donegal, or is the whole location imagined?
No, it is. He's journeying to Donegal. Okay. The story is that they were probably in the north, because Kieran also comes from Belfast, and it was partly based on sort of personal story. My dad was from Belfast, and he used to holiday in Donegal. This is back in the 30s when it was the back of beyond, and absolutely loved it. And so that there was a lot of sort of family history there about the magic of Donegal. So it felt the right place to do it. And it becomes, the physical journey, obviously, in a road movie is very important. And so all these incredible spots became waypoints for his emotional journey as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. A lot of effort goes into, I suppose, trying to attract production to this part of the world and to make it as easy, as enjoyable as is possible. What was your experience like in terms of, you know, a lot of the places that you mentioned, you probably had to get permission to shoot, and you have lots of different moving pieces, okay? What was the, and as also maybe talk to the people of the region, what was it like practically and also too in terms of the people?
Practically, actually, it was really straightforward. They couldn't have been more helpful. You know, Donegal have a sort of film commission, and they helped us get locations done. Obviously, finding locations was a key bit. So we had a very good local location manager who would take us round all the spots. And the people, can't speak more highly of them. They were so warm, hospitable, and that's very much the theme of the film. We were all based in Rathmelton, which has one of the best pubs I've ever been to, 50 yards from where we were staying. So that became a kind of hub for not only after shooting, but also, you know, we actually filmed there for a couple of scenes as well. It was great. And I don't know if you know Rathmelton, but it's got surprisingly sophisticated coffee shops and delis and all that. It's restaurants. It suited us very well.
Brilliant. And we will all get a chance to see it, hopefully. Its cinema release is on Friday, the 17th of April. What is the plan for getting the work out to the masses?
Well, it's sort of publicity. People like yourself can help, definitely. And, you know, word of mouth will certainly do it. Kieran was on the Late Late Show this week, so that I hope will bring people to it. It's a small indie movie, but if people enjoy it, the best thing is just to tell your friends about it and say, look, it's a feel-good movie. There's no war, there's no fighting, there's no blood, there's no murder. I mean, it's quite unusual in the present environment. And fantastic music all the way through. We were so lucky, had some great Donegal musicians playing. And for me, that was a delight. One of the harpists, Nolly Brolig, she sang a song in Irish which just breaks your heart.
Yeah, okay. Looking forward to it. And, you know, I mean, it works on so many different levels. Obviously, it's your work, it's your art, but it also is a big, massive poster advertising our beautiful part of the world at the same time, you know?
Well, you're not kidding. We had 3 weeks of blue skies, which in April is pretty unusual, I think, in Donegal. So it looks like the south of France sometimes, and all the gorse was out. So a lot of people have said, oh my gosh, this is just like the best advert for Donegal tourism that you could get. And I hope it brings people to Donegal because it deserves it.
Oh, lovely stuff. Okay, so check out where it might be showing. It's a cinema release on Friday, the 17th of April, and presumably from there... It depends who picks it up in terms of streaming or players or whatever down the line.
It, Exactly. It's sort of got, we know we've got Spain, Greece, Portugal, and there'll be a US release. So it's one of those ones that is a slow burner, I think. It's not a Marvel movie, that's for sure. But no, it'll have a good life, I think.
I think that works to its advantage. I think people are bombarded with that type of stuff. It's nice to see something different. Well, congratulations on getting it done. It's an amazing thing, really. Humans are great. And it's all going to be released in the cinemas from Friday the 17th of April. Spread the word. John Paul Davidson, co-writer and director of The Three Urns, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye. Look after yourself. Okay, there you go. Look forward to that. We'll get a... maybe if any of the local cinema companies are showing that, they'll let us know. I don't actually have a release... I'm not sure, was it Remelton or Rathmullen? Because he kind of was saying both at the same time. It was Remelton, okay. And it is a beautiful part of the world, no doubt about that. Right, 086 60 25,000 is our WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. Many of you using it. Morning, Greg. I didn't see the Donegal match yesterday, but listening to the texts coming in on Michael Murphy and his incident with a Kerry player, listen every day and really enjoy your show. Thank you. Yeah, well, that's what we get. I mean, like, it's, you have to be careful with language when you're covering this type of stuff, believe it or not, because even, you know, people can contest what you saw or didn't see and what have you. So you'd have to be wee bit careful with language. Hi, Greg. Any progress on the infamous retail park toilets? That comes in from Daniel. Caroline, I'm looking at you. Any toilet updates? The toilets down in you know where? We've put in a question to see if there is any update. Last time, maybe it was you, Daniel, that messaged in. I kind of get frustrated talking about it because I feel like we've put it out there a few times that they're literally just about to be opened almost. And it seems to be one false dawn after another, which is really quite regrettable. Just a reminder for you, by the way, to keep an eye out on our socials later. We were all down, not all of us, quite a few of us, me and Aisling and others from here, down at the Donegal Person of the Year Awards. And I don't know if it's an age thing, but I'm really going off out socialising, to be honest. The depression afterwards would almost kill you. But anyway... We did have a fantastic time on the night, and we have some wonderful footage of Packy and others, and we'll be putting that together and releasing it later this evening or maybe tomorrow. We shall see. Let me go to Donna Gill now. Hi, Donna.
Hello, Greg.
Right. Now, you have sent in some images to us highlighting your mother's living conditions. Just pick up the story wherever you want to. What is the situation?
Right, Greg. So my mum bought her council apartment in January 2009. Mm-hmm. And so obviously over the years, there's been the cracks from... You can see them everywhere. Donegal's full of them. And then it was 4 years ago that my mum... Sorry, it's a four-block apartment. And on the other side of her block, the tenants were moved out 4 years ago for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. Now, my mum has... they'd be moved. It's been cordoned off at that side and my mum's apartment, and there's another council renter still below my mum. And we heard nothing. We didn't know what was happening. We were kind of left in limbo, so I kind of got the ball rolling. So... I started by contacting the council in May of last year. I called a few times and then I emailed with everything. I didn't really get much back, and then I was advised to contact the Donegal, the defective block scheme, which we did, and they returned an email to say that unfortunately apartments aren't covered under the scheme. So that kind of left us at where do we go next. So then we had no other choice but to join Coleman Legal in June of last year. And then in October of last year, I saw a picture on Councillor Joy Beard's page of the now President, Catherine Connolly. She was doing her presidential campaign in Buncrana, and she actually was taking... There's a picture up on Joy's page of her taking a picture of my mum's apartment. She was down looking at the apartments down there, and she was taking a picture of it. So I bit the bullet then, and I contacted Councillor Joy Beard in January of this year. And I have to give her credit. She came and met with me and my mum in mid-January, and she just couldn't believe the state of the apartment. This has been a really stressful time for my mum. She spent the time in hospital in November. Mm-hmm. She's worried, she's stressed with that we have no avenues whatsoever. She's literally been left in limbo, and we literally are hitting a very crumbling brick wall of what to do. Sean, to be, tell you the truth, yep. Greg, sorry, I don't know what even to say at this stage, because she's just at a loss.
I just wonder sometimes if we've got a little bit used to what goes on, because, like, there's, I don't know what weight is in some of this plaster, but if that were mm-hmm. to come down on anyone, like, this reminds me of the conversations we were having 10 years ago, and we haven't really had them as much since, in terms of what if parts of this house start giving away mm-hmm. and fall on someone, either exiting or entering. I mean, these are massive sheets of plaster that are coming away from the defective concrete blocks. You know, that should 100%. Be instantly condemned. You would imagine in any right-thinking society that yellow tape should go around that building and people move to emergency accommodation. Yet we've sort of come almost accustomed to it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, so, like, Councillor Joy Beard has said she put a motion forward to the Housing Minister to include the apartments in the Safety Defects Bill, and this was passed at council level. But, you know, we did, I emailed all the TDs as well in January, and they did reply back, and there was one in particular was from Minister Brown, Minister for Housing, and it is, the wording was, it is envisaged that 100% remediation costs will be funded. Envisaged, that's not really good enough. Mm-hmm. My mum's 76. Her process hasn't even nowhere near started. And, like, we've no precise timeline. She is literally having, especially with the winter that we've had, and in the last 2 weeks, them cracks are bulging. They're starting to come away. So, and there's a lady living down below her and her daughter. So my mum's worried now that, obviously, for her own safety and for the safety of the below tenant. And we are literally being left in limbo.
And there's another layer to this in that your mother owns this property and she actually bought it from the council.
Yeah.
When did that transaction happen? It must be some time ago.
In 2009. Okay. 2008. My mum moved in there in 2002. And then in 2009, she bought her own apartment. She wanted to own her own home. She's worked all her life. She worked for 25 years in Buncrana Community Hospital, caring for, you know, she was a care assistant. Mm. She was caring for the elderly for 25 years, and now the government can't even care for her.
What's the living conditions like internally? Has the defective concrete shown its face indoors?
There's loads of cracks, Greg. There's loads. The biggest issue for her at the moment is, hers is oil fired central heating, and that is never off.
Yeah.
She has to have that on constant, because as soon as they moved out, the adjoining tenants, of course, it's cold all the time. She, as I say, she's never leaves the GP. She is the local chemist's best customer, because she's never ever out of there, because she's always got some kind of sickness or chest infections, and she's 76, and, like, she's literally been left, you know. It's a horrible, horrible situation.
And it's horrible for you to look on, because she's 76 and it's a good age, but she's still young enough to be able to be happy and healthy and have pride in her home. Do you know, like...
100%.
You know, but she deserves that, but she's not getting that. This is going to be constantly... The one thing I know about defective concrete blocks, Donna, it's ever-present, it's constant. You cannot escape the fact that it's there in your life. And especially when it seemed it was so important for your mum to have her own place, for whatever reason it is, I presume security and just a want. And now what has she got? She's got something that's completely worthless, and she's thinking, well, you know, God forbid if something happens to me, what happens to this building? You know,
exactly.
Or what, you know.
And even if, say down the line, how far down the line this is, if the safety defects in apartments, no, if that's, if this is only, this is, if they go down this pathway, like, So the apartments will be included in the, in the legislation going through the actors at the minute for safety defects. But that's the only pathway she has. And even if that comes to fruition, my mum's fines is below her, which someone else is living in. She actually is, has a roof over someone else's head as well.
Yeah, it's so complicated.
Yeah, it's so complicated and it's so complex, but it's just been radio silence, literally. We, as I say, I tried with the council, but I never got anything back in writing. And then the only other option we had was to join Coleman Legal. But this process, how long is it going to take?
No,
she's trapped in an unsafe building.
And where would she be on any list, if you know what I mean, in terms of, you know, even if the scheme was widened? That being mm-hmm. said, I don't want to make out as if it's a hopeless situation, because there's always hope and you have to keep plugging away. As soon as you make contact with us on something like this, Donna, the team instantly reach out to the likes of the Department of Housing, local authorities. So that is already in the works, and we'll see what they come back to us with. It's horrible. It's desperate for your mum, and I'm sorry she's having to go through this, especially when it's impacting on her physical health. And the stress of something like this, I think there's a, almost a multiplying factor of anything physical you have when you're stressed. You know, I think it almost makes everything everything worse. But anyway, listen.
Oh, for sure.
We'll make the contacts and see what comes from that. It's just even to have information. I mean, we're not going to be able to fix this overnight.
Exactly. Just somewhere to turn. Okay. Somewhere to turn, even at this stage.
Rightio.
Thanks a million.
Okay,
appreciate
listen,
it. Great.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you. Best wishes to your mum as well, by the way, for what that might be worth. That's Donna Gill there. The three urns, by the way, our brilliant team have found out that, as I mentioned, there's a nationwide release on April 17th, and it's going to be shown in two fantastic venues that we have here in County Donegal, the Century in Letterkenny and Eclipse Cinema in Bundoran and Lifford. So covered all bases from April 17th. A bit of an indie, potentially an indie classic, and it features that beautiful part of Donegal as well. So thanks to the guys for finding out. It's in Century Cinemas in Letterkenny and Eclipse Cinemas Bundoran and Lifford as well. So somewhere near you, I hope. Had a contact from a listener, Daniel, about the public toilets in Letterkenny, and it seems we have some good news. And Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh, who's been working on this an awful lot, and it must be noted as well that I think there could be a great deal of frustration and banging heads against walls from our local elected representatives as well in trying to get these types of projects over the line. First and foremost, good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, good, good. So what is the up-to-date position re these public toilets?
Yeah, Greg, up to, and this is just from Friday, but they're all ready to go, and they have been now for a few weeks. So there was some groundwork to finish off. But the update now is that the official opening is on Friday the 17th of April, and Minister Eamonn Higgins will be there for that. That's scheduled. There's been a preliminary way because the invites and that aren't out yet, Greg, but it's scheduled for 11:15 on Friday the 17th of April.
Brilliant.
And the minister's here for the full day that day. Yeah, Greg, it's great. And you're right in what you said. There has been an awful lot of delays and frustration, all of it really out of our hands, because there was, among other things, there was a change of ownership down there, which meant the thing had to pretty much start from the beginning again. I would like to thank Trudy O'Reilly, the access officer in the council, who's done tremendous work at this over a long period of time, making sure that that we hung in there and got it and got the deal done on us. So I'm delighted now that they are opening. You'll know as well, Greg, that there was no toilets of any kind down in that area, and for years it's been since town council days, it's been coming up about no toilets down there. So we're solving that problem as well as providing an up-to-date, state-of-the-art change in places facility. So it's good.
That's really important, an important element of it. So it is public toilets and it's changing spaces facility as well.
Yeah, that's right, and regular disabled toilets as well as the changing places facility. So.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
It makes a big difference for people coming into the area or living in the area. Okay, thanks for the update, Councillor. I appreciate it.
Not about it, Greg. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye, Councillor. Fine Gael Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh there. So the Minister, Eamonn Higgins, Department of Children, Disability and Equality, is up in the county for a full day visit, according to Jimmy there, on Friday the 17th of April, and it's officially opening those facilities early that day. Great. Hi, Greg. Well done to Donegal v Kerry in their fantastic win. I usually see the John 3:14 sign, but yesterday's 3:19 score, could that be another sign? By the way, can the team use Ruth to drive them on now with her everlasting enthusiasm? That comes in from Kevin, who loves the show. Kevin, thank you. We love hearing from you as well. Like the lady on the radio now, I have to say she's so calm and patient as a driving instructor. I had other instructors, but I have to say all my nerves disappeared after a lesson with Angela. That comes in from a listener there. Back to the GEA. Hi, Greg. It's a pity the national media didn't highlight David Clifford driving the ball at Mulroney's head when the ball wasn't in play yesterday, or the instant when Dublin's Owen Merkin deliberately kneed a Donegal player while he was lying on the ground in a recent league game in Croker. Back to driving. Great, that lady Rita is amazing. Huge congrats. Well done to her. That comes in from Mary. And that was Rita O'Brien Meehan, who was on with us earlier on, who passed her driving test first time after six lessons, aged 90. Brilliant story. And she sounds like a wonderful lady as well. Both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have normalised all crisis, in my opinion, says the listener, from hospital trolleys, hospital waiting lists, scoliosis, homeless housing crisis, cost of living and defective concrete where homes are crumbling down on families, is the view of a listener there. Rightio, that is where we have to leave it for Monday's show. Thank you to all of you who listened to the programme, or if you watched the show, and especially those of you who had the time to text in. I know it's not for everyone, but it's very much appreciated. And it is not ignored. We read them all. Just to remind you that if you missed any of today's show, you can podcast it on our website, highlandradio.com. And it's also on Spotify and iTunes. So if you can give us, I think it's called Apple Podcasts now. It's not called iTunes any longer, so I'll have to update some of that stuff. But anyway, you can find us there. And if you subscribe to us or give us a rating, it'd be really appreciated. And of course, every Friday morning, we release a new podcast, The Greg Hughes Podcast, where we have real stories from amazing people. So check them out too. There's quite a back catalogue there, all in the same feed.